Once he had subsequently treated her and restored her health, she was then instructed by Demosts, and Atossa raised this matter with Darius while they lay together at night. "My king, despite holding such great power, you remain seated, neither annexing any nation nor expanding Persian strength. It would suit a man who is young and lord of such wealth to demonstrate some visible achievement, so the Persians themselves may recognize they are governed by a real man. Doing this benefits you in two ways, so the Persians come to know that their leader is truly a man, and so they stay occupied by warfare rather than having free time to conspire against you. Right now, while you are still young in years, is when you could achieve something notable, for as the body matures, the mind matures alongside it, but as it grows old, the mind grows old along with it and becomes dulled to all affairs." She delivered this speech as she had been coached, and he responded with the following. "Wife, you have described exactly what I myself already plan to carry out. I have decided to build a bridge spanning from this continent to the other and march against the Scythians, and this will be brought about before long." Atossa answered, "Consider this, though, let the campaign against the Scythians wait for later, since they will be available to you whenever you wish. Instead, for my sake, march against Greece. For I desire, hearing of them by report, to have Spartan handmaidens, and Argive, and Attic, and Corinthian. And you have the man best suited of all men to inform you of everything about Greece and to guide you there, this man who healed your foot." Darius answered, "Wife, since it seems best to you that we make trial of Greece first, it seems to me better first to send Persian scouts along with the man you speak of to Greece, who will learn and see and report each thing back to us. And then, once I am fully informed, I will turn against them." He said this and at once matched word with deed. For as soon as day dawned, he called 15 distinguished Persian men and instructed them to travel with Demosts along the coastal parts of Greece, taking care that Demosts should not escape from them, but that they should by all means bring him back. Having given them these instructions, he next called Demosts himself and asked him, once he had guided the Persians through the whole of Greece and shown it to them, to return. He ordered him to take all his father's household goods and give them to his father and brothers, saying he would give him back many times as much in return. And further, for the gifts, he said he would contribute a merchant ship. He promised to load it with goods of every kind for him, to travel alongside him. Darius, as far as I can tell, offered all this without any deceptive motive. But Demosts, worried that Darius might be testing him, refrained from eagerly grabbing everything that was offered. Instead, he said he would leave his belongings behind in place, so he could retrieve them upon returning, but that he would take the merchant vessel Darius had promised as a gift for his brothers. Having given the same instructions to him as well, Darius sent them off to the sea. Going down to Phoenicia, and from Phoenicia to the city of Sidon, they at once manned two triremes, and along with them a great cargo ship full of all sorts of goods. Having made every preparation, they sailed for Greece, and putting in along its coasts they observed and made records, until, having viewed most of its notable places, they arrived at Tarentum in Italy. There, out of kindness toward Demosts, Aristophilides, king of the Tarentines, removed the rudders from the Median ships, and moreover detained the Persians themselves as being, supposedly, spies. While they were suffering this, Demosts made his way to Croton. Only after Demosts had already reached his own city did Aristophilides release the Persians and give back what he had taken from the ships. Sailing on from there, the Persians pursued Demosts and arrived at Croton, and finding him in the marketplace, they laid hold of him. Some of the Crotoniates, fearing Persian power, were ready to give him up, but others held on to him and struck the Persians with their staffs, as the Persians pleaded these words. "Men of Croton, see what you are doing. You are taking away a man who is a runaway from the king. How can this fail to be seen as an outrage against King Darius? How can what you are doing turn out well for you if you take him from us? Against which city shall we march first because of this? Which shall we choose first to enslave?" Saying this, they did not persuade the Crotoniates, but having had Demosts taken from them, and the merchant ship they were bringing with him taken away as well, they sailed back to Asia, and did not even try to learn more of Greece further inland, now that they were deprived of their guide. Demosts, however, as they were setting out, gave them this one instruction: to tell Darius that Demosts had betrothed himself to the daughter of Milo. For the name of Milo, the wrestler carried great weight with the king. And it is for this reason, it seems to me, it appears that Demosthenes rushed to complete this marriage at enormous cost, so that even back in his homeland, he would be seen as a man of standing because of his ties to Darius. After setting sail from Croton, the Persians were shipwrecked on the shores of Iapygia, and while enslaved there, Gillis, an exiled Tarentine, rescued and escorted them back to King Darius. In exchange, Darius stood ready to grant him anything he desired. Gillis chose to have his return to Tarentum arranged, first explaining his misfortune. But so as not to throw Greece into turmoil, in case a great expedition should sail against Italy on his account, he said it would be enough for the Cnidians alone to bring him back, since they were friends of the Tarentines, and he supposed his restoration would come about most readily through them. Darius agreed to this, and set about fulfilling it, for he sent a messenger to Cnidus ordering them to restore Gillis to Tarentum. The Cnidians obeyed Darius but could not persuade the Tarentines, and they were unable to use force. So this affair turned out as it did. These Persians were the first to come from Asia to Greece, and it was for this reason that they became spies. After this, King Darius took Samos, the first of all cities, Greek or barbarian, that he captured, for the following reason. When Cambyses, son of Cyrus, was campaigning against Egypt, many Greeks went to Egypt too, some, naturally enough, on campaign for trade, and others simply to see the country itself. Among these was Silasen, son of Eaxes, brother of Polycrates and an exile from Samos. This Silasen met with a stroke of good fortune of the following kind. He had put on a cloak, wrapped himself in a crimson one, and went about selling goods in the marketplace at Memphis. Darius spotted him at that time merely a bodyguard of Cambyses and not yet a man of much reputation, and wanting the cloak, approached and offered to purchase it. Silasen, noticing how badly Darius wanted the cloak, and acting under some divine prompting, told him, "I won't sell this garment for any sum, but I'll give it to you at no cost, since it apparently must be so, entirely for your sake." Darius, praising this, accepted the garment. Silasen supposed he had simply lost it through his own foolishness. But as time went on, and Cambyses died, and the seven rose up against the Magus, and of the seven Darius obtained the kingship, Silasen learned that the kingship had come round to that very man to whom he himself had given the garment to a man who requested it in Egypt. So he traveled to Susa, took a seat at the entrance of the royal residence, and declared himself a benefactor of Darius. The gatekeeper heard this and relayed it to the king, who responded in astonishment, "And which Greek benefactor could this be, to whom I owe such gratitude, given how newly I hold the throne? Barely a single one of them has come to see us until now, and I cannot recall owing any debt to a Greek. Still, escort him inside so I can find out what he means by this claim." The gatekeeper led Silasen in, and once he stood before them, the interpreters questioned him about his identity and what deed made him claim to be a benefactor of the king. Silasen then recounted the whole episode involving the cloak and said that he himself was the one who had given it. Darius answered, "Noblest of men, you are the one who, when I had as yet no power at all, gave me something, even if it was small. Yet the gratitude is equally great as if I should now receive something great from anyone. In return, I give you gold and silver without measure, so that you will never regret having done good to Darius son of Hystaspes." To this Silasen replied, "Give me neither gold nor silver, O king, but recover for me and give me my homeland, Samos, which our slave Arotes now holds since my brother Polycrates was killed by him. Give it to me without bloodshed or enslavement." Hearing this, Darius sent an army, and as its general Atanes, one of the totaling seven, directing that whatever Silasen had requested be carried out completely. Atanes then made his way down to the coast and prepared the army for departure. Meanwhile, Meandrius, son of Meandrius, held authority over Samos, having taken up rule as a trustee under Polycrates. Though he wished to be counted the most just of men, he failed to achieve it. For as soon as news reached him of Polycrates's death, he took the following steps. First, he built an altar to Zeus the Liberator and marked out around it a precinct, which is now in the suburb of the city. Then, when this had been done, he gathered an assembly of all the citizens and said this, "To me, as you also know, the scepter and all the power of Polycrates has been entrusted, and it is now in my power to rule over you. But as for what I reproach in my neighbor, I myself will not do it as far as I can help. For I never approved of Polycrates lording it over men who were his equals, nor of anyone else who does such things. Polycrates fulfilled his own destiny, and I now place the rule in the common hands and proclaim equality before the law for you. But I do claim these privileges for myself, that 6 talents be set aside for me out of the property of Polycrates, and besides this, I choose for myself the priesthood of Zeus the Liberator, for myself, and for those who are ever descended from me, for whom I myself established the shrine, and to whom I now grant your freedom. This is what he proclaimed to the Samians. But one of them stood up and said, But you are not even worthy to rule over us, being base-born and a ruin of a man, rather you should give an account of the money you have handled. This was said by a man of standing among the citizens named Telesarchus. But Meandrius, reflecting that if he let go of power, someone else would set himself up as tyrant in his place, no longer had any intention of giving it up. Instead, once he had withdrawn to the Acropolis, he summoned each man one by one, ostensibly to render an account of the money, and seized and bound them. So they were kept in bonds, but afterward sickness overtook Meandrius. His brother, whose name was Lycurtus, expecting him to die, in order that he might more easily seize control of affairs in Samos, put all the prisoners to death, for it seems they did not wish to remain free. When the Persians arrived at Samos bringing back Silasen, not a single hand was lifted against them, and the partisans of Meandrius said they were ready, under truce, to leave the island, and Meandrius himself also. Athenes agreed to these terms and made a truce, and the most eminent of the Persians set their thrones opposite the Acropolis and sat down. Now Meandrius the tyrant had a brother somewhat weak in mind, named Charilaus. This man, having committed some offense, was bound in the dungeon. And just then, hearing what was happening and peering out through the dungeon, when he saw the Persians sitting there peacefully, he shouted out and said he wished to come to speech with Meandrius. Meandrius, hearing this, ordered him released and brought to him. And as soon as he was brought, reviling and reproaching him, he tried to persuade him to attack the Persians, saying this, Me, most base of men, though I am your own brother and have done nothing deserving of bonds, you saw fit to bind in the dungeon. Yet seeing the Persians casting you out and making you homeless, you dare not take vengeance, though they are so very easy to overpower. But if you are afraid of them, give me the mercenaries, and I will punish them for coming here. As for you yourself, I am ready to send you out of the island. This is what Charilaus said, and Meandrius took up the suggestion, not because, in my view, he was foolish enough to imagine his own power could outmatch the king's, but rather out of envy toward Silasen, that he should recover the city intact without effort. So, by provoking the Persians, he wanted to make the affairs of Samos as weak as possible before handing it over, well knowing that the Persians, having suffered harm, would then grow still more embittered against the Samians, and knowing that he himself had a secure means of getting off the island whenever he chose. For a secret tunnel had been made for him, leading from the Acropolis to the sea. Meandrius himself sailed out from Samos, but Charilaus armed all the mercenaries, and, throwing open the gates, launched them against the Persians, who expected nothing of the sort and thought that everything had been settled. The mercenaries fell upon those of the Persians who were carried in litters and were of the highest repute, and killed them. While they were doing this, the rest of the Persian army came to the rescue. The mercenaries, hard-pressed, were driven back into the Acropolis. Athenes the general, seeing the great disaster the Persians had suffered, deliberately forgot the instructions Darius had given him when sending him out, neither to kill nor enslave any of the Samians, but to hand the island back to Silasen unharmed, and instead ordered the army to kill everyone they took, man and child alike. At this, some of the army besieged the Acropolis, while others killed everyone they came across, alike within the temple and outside it. Meandrius, having fled from Samos, sailed off to Laestymon, and having arrived there and brought up what he had, he did the following. Whenever he set out silver and gold cups for display, his servants would polish them, while he, for that time, would be in conversation with Cleomenes, son of Anaxandrides, king of Sparta, and would lead him into the house. And whenever Cleomenes saw the cups, he would be amazed and astonished, and Meandrius would urge him to take away as many of them as he wished. When Meandrius had said this 2 or 3 times, Cleomenes proved himself the most just of men, for he did not think it right to take what was offered. But realizing that if Meandrius offered them to other citizens he would find help there, he went to the ephors it would be better for Sparta if the Samian stranger left the Peloponnese, so that he might not persuade either himself or some other Spartan to come to harm. They took his advice and had Meandrius proclaimed banished. As for Samos, the Persians dragged the island with a net and handed it over to Silasen stripped of its men. Later, however, the general Atanes helped resettle it, prompted by a dream vision and by an illness that had afflicted his private parts. While the naval expedition against Samos was underway, the Babylonians revolted, having prepared themselves very thoroughly indeed. For during the whole time that the Magus ruled and the Seven rose up against him, throughout all that time in turmoil, they had been making ready for the siege. Somehow they managed to do this without being noticed. When they finally revolted openly, they did the following. They picked out their mothers, and each man selected in addition one wife from his own household, whichever he wished, and gathered together all the rest of the women and strangled them. The one wife each man kept as a baker of bread. They strangled the others so that they would not use up the food supply. When Darius learned of this, he gathered his whole force and marched against them. He advanced on Babylon and laid siege to it, though the Babylonians cared nothing for the siege. For the Babylonians would climb up onto the battlements of the wall and dance and jeer at Darius and his army, and one of them called out this taunt. "Why are you sitting there, Persians? Why don't you leave? You'll take this city when mules give birth." A Babylonian spoke these words, never expecting a mule to bear young. But when a year and 7 months had passed, Darius was by now vexed, and his whole army was unable to take the Babylonians. Yet Darius had tried every trick and every device against them. Nothing worked, even though among other stratagems he had also tried the one by which Cyrus had taken the city before. But the Babylonians kept guard with tremendous vigilance, and he was unable to capture them. Then, in the 20th month, a portent occurred for Zopyrus son of Megabyzus, this Megabyzus being one of the 7 men who had brought down the Magus. To this Zopyrus, son of Megabyzus, this marvel occurred. One of his baggage-carrying mules gave birth. When it was reported to him, and in disbelief, Zopyrus himself saw the newborn, he forbade those who had seen it to tell anyone what had happened, and he pondered the matter. Recalling the words of that Babylonian, who at the start had said that when mules gave birth the wall would then be taken, in light of this saying it seemed to Zopyrus that Babylon was capturable. For it seemed that it was by divine will both that the man had spoken those words and that his own mule had given birth. Once he had concluded that it was now fated for Babylon to be captured, he went to Darius and asked whether he set very great store on taking Babylon. Learning that Darius valued it highly indeed, he considered further how he himself might be the one to capture it, so that the achievement would be his own. For among the Persians, great deeds of service are honored in proportion to their magnitude. He could think of no other way by which he could be capable of subduing the city, except by maiming himself and deserting to the enemy. So, thinking nothing of it, he inflicted upon himself an irreparable mutilation. He cut off his own nose and ears, cropped his hair disgracefully, had himself whipped, and came before Darius. Darius took it very hard indeed when he saw a man of the highest standing so mutilated. Leaping up from his throne, he cried out and asked him who had done this to him, and for what reason. Zopyrus said, "There is no man who could do this to me except you, to whom belongs such power. No stranger did this deed, O king, but I myself did it to myself, thinking it a terrible thing that Assyrians should mock Persians." Darius answered, "Wretchedest of men, you have given the most beautiful name to the most shameful deed, claiming that on account of the besieged you have ruined yourself beyond repair. What, you fool, will make the enemy surrender any sooner because you are mutilated? How did you not lose your senses in destroying yourself?" Zopyrus said, "If I had told you beforehand what I intended to do, you would not have allowed it. As it is, I acted on my own account. Now then, if you play your part, we will take Babylon. I will desert as I am to the wall and say to them that I suffered this at your hands. I think that once I have persuaded them this is so, I will be given command of troops. Then you, from whatever day I enter the wall, on the 10th day from that day, take 1,000 men of your army, men whose loss you will not mind at all, and station them at the gate called after Semiramis. Then again, from the 10th day to the 7th day after, station for me another 2,000 at the gate called after Ninus. Then, from that seventh day, let 20 days pass, and after that lead and station 4,000 more at the gate called after the Chaldeans. Let neither the first group nor these have any weapons of defense with them except daggers. Let them keep those. Then, after the 20th day, immediately order the rest of the army to attack the wall on all sides, and station the Persians for me at the gates called Belid and Sishon. For as I reckon it, once I have displayed great deeds, the Babylonians will entrust everything to me, and in particular the bolts of the gates. From then on it will be my concern and the Persians to do what needs to be done. Having given these instructions, he went toward the gates, looking back repeatedly, as if he were truly a deserter. Those stationed to watch from the towers, seeing him, ran down and, opening one of the gates a little, asked who he was and what he wanted. He told them he was Zopyrus and was deserting to their side. The gatekeepers, hearing this, led him before the public assembly of the Babylonians. Standing before them, he lamented, saying that he had suffered at the hands of Darius what he had in fact done to himself, and that this was the price of having urged Darius to withdraw the army, since no way of capturing the city appeared. And now, he said, Babylonians, I have come to you as the greatest good, and to Darius and his army and the Persians as the greatest evil. He will not get away with mutilating me like this. I know all the ways through his plans. Such were his words. The Babylonians, seeing a man of the highest standing among the Persians deprived of his nose and ears, smeared with blood from the whips, fully believed his story was genuine and that he had arrived to fight on their side, and were ready to entrust to him whatever he asked of them. And what he asked for was troops. Once he had received this from them, he did as he had agreed with Darius, leading out the Babylonian army on the 10th day and surrounding the 1,000 men whom he had instructed Darius to station first, he slaughtered them. The Babylonians, seeing that his deeds matched his words, were overjoyed and altogether ready to serve him in anything. He let the agreed number of days pass, then again choosing men from the Babylonians, led them out and slaughtered the 2,000 of Darius's soldiers. Seeing this deed too, all the Babylonians had Zopyrus's praises on their lips. Again letting the agreed days pass, he led the army out to the appointed place, and surrounding the 4,000, he slaughtered them. When this too had been accomplished, Zopyrus was everything to the Babylonians, and he was appointed their commander-in-chief and guardian of the wall. When Darius, according to their agreement, made his assault all around the wall, Zopyrus then revealed the whole plot. The Babylonians climbed up onto the wall and defended against Darius's attacking army, but Zopyrus opened the gates called Sishon and Belid and let the Persians into the wall. Of the Babylonians, those who saw what had been done fled to the temple of Zeus Belus. Those who did not see it remained each at his post, until they too learned that they had been betrayed. Thus Babylon was taken for the second time. When Darius had mastered the Babylonians, he tore down their wall and ripped out all the gates. For when Cyrus had taken Babylon before, he had done neither of these things, and he impaled about 3,000 of the ringleaders among the men, and gave back the city to the remaining Babylonians to inhabit, so that the Babylonians might have wives to bear offspring for them, since, as has been shown earlier, they had strangled their own women out of concern for the food supply. Darius, foreseeing this, did the following. He ordered the neighboring peoples to send women to Babylon, assigning to each a certain number, so that the total tally of women that came together amounted to 50,000. It is from these women that the present-day Babylonians are descended. As for Zopyrus, in the judgment of Darius, no Persian ever surpassed his service, either of those who came later or of those before him, except Cyrus alone. For with Cyrus, no Persian ever claimed to be worthy of comparison. It is said that Darius often expressed the opinion that he would rather have Zopyrus unharmed by his mutilation than gain 20 more Babylons in addition to the one he had. He honored him greatly. Each year he gave him gifts of those things most prized among the Persians, and he gave him Babylon to hold free of tribute for the rest of his life, and bestowed many other things upon him besides. From this, Zopyrus was born Megabyzus, who, as general, commanded the forces in Egypt that fought the Athenians together with their allies. And from this, Megabyzus was born Zopyrus, who deserted to Athens from the Persians.